Good morning. Welcome to Senate Finance. I'd like to call the meeting to order. Today is Friday, April 27, 2018. The time is 9:07 a.m. If you're joining us off-net or online, we're in Juneau, Alaska, the state capitol, on the fifth floor in room 532. I'm Co-Chairman Anna McKinnon. With me this morning, Co-Chairman Hoffman.
Good morning, Madam Chair.
Vice Chairman Bishop.
Good morning, Madam Chair.
Senator Olson.
Good morning, Madam Chair.
Other members of the Finance Committee are away on other state business. Senator Michicki and Senator Stevens and Senator von Imhoff should be joining us shortly. Senator Stevens, welcome to Senate. Good morning. As all committee members know, we have multiple bills in our possession from the House of Representatives regarding proposed changes to the revolving loan programs. That's HB 56, Commercial Fishing Loans, HB 76, Mariculture Revolving Loan Fund, and HB 304, Microloan Revolving Loan Funds. Is there anything to come before the committee before we begin?
No.
I'd like to invite Brittany Chione Haywood, she's the Director of the Division of Economic Development, to the table. We do have a presentation on understanding more about the jobs that we are trying to create by the provision of these particular loans and funding sources from the state of Alaska. Brief at ease. We're back on the record. Senate Finance, April 27, 2019. The time is 9:11 a.m. We are getting ready to have a presentation from the Division of Economic Development, Investment, Loan Programs. If you would like Jim Anderson at the microphone also to answer questions, please approach the table.
Thank you so much.
And then if you could introduce yourself for the records. Welcome again to Senator Michicki, Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you so much. My name is Brittany Choni Haywood. I'm the Director for the Division of Economic Development.
My name is Jim Anderson. I'm the Operations Manager for Division of Economic Development.
Welcome to Senate Finance.
Shall we begin?
We shall. Again, to set the stage, we have multiple bills in our committee that are proposing changes to the revolving loan program. We have asked that the representatives for those bills do not attend today's session. This is not about those bills, though we might start talking about some of them, and so you've been provided those bills at your table. But really, it's a baseline understanding of the programs, how much money is out there, and different questions this committee has asked the department to provide, since there are private sector loan programs that are available to many of these, for many of these products. And so I think there's an interest in understanding why the state is doing something the private sector can do, as well as the profitability of what we're doing and the benefit to the people of Alaska for those that are accessing these funds. Is that fair, Senators? Please continue.
Thank you. The revolving loan funds, or RLFs as the abbreviation, are an important tool for economic development toolbox. These funds have real-world impacts on Alaskan lives. They strengthen our important industries. They create long-term employment and increase private sector lending and investment. Without a diverse portfolio of loan funds, economic development stagnates, especially in rural, underserved, and distressed areas of the state. The state of Alaska understood this and created revolving loan funds that have operated for more than 45 years. This is an overview of the loan programs. We currently have just over 2,000 loans that are active. We have principal outstanding of just under $200 million and total loan officers of 8. That would be 3 in Anchorage, 5 in Juneau.
Brief at ease. We're back on the record. For those that are following us offnet or online, I was asking Senator Von Imhoff what a private sector ratio is to the number of loan officers versus the cash outstanding balance on what we're doing. Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you. It's very difficult to tell a ratio from these numbers simply because you have all of these different funds. And how much are each in these funds? What loans are outstanding in each of the different funds? Because not all funds are equal. Some funds are administered differently than other funds, have different application, different tracking and monitoring. And to say that this is a standard ratio is it's hard to tell.
So. Later in the presentation, are we going to get a more defined number of responsibilities for these 8 individuals and what their workload looks like? The issue for the legislature is that we're seeing in some of the bills before us, I believe, positions that are currently being utilized inside of each program, and we're wondering what that workload looks like and whether we can reduce or eliminate programs based on or positions based on their workload. And that was one of the purposes of understanding this $199 million or just under $200 million. So will we get that information, or do we need to provide you time to give us that information at another time? Brief at ease. We're back on the record. Brittany?
Madam Chair, we have some other information. I'm not sure that it will specifically address that question, so if it's not addressed in the presentation, then I will need to submit a response after the hearing.
Thank you. Senator Michicki.
Not exactly sure what we're looking at, but as long as we have this slide, just doing the simple math, this means that if there are actually 8 loan officers, they have an average of 252 loans apiece, and they have an average of $24 million of value. If just for the record, if folks haven't done the simple math.
Senator Michicki, thank you. I think that's the issue. Is it simple math, or is there a disparity between who's handling large sums of money and what's the delinquency rate, which is why we're having this presentation. Please continue.
Thank you so much. I will state that all loan officers handle all types of loans. We do not have specific loan officers for specific loan programs, if that is useful.
Madam Chair.
Senator Bishop.
So could you quantify that a little further for me, meaning the loan officers execute these loans on this page right here, but is there other loan programs within the division that they execute as well?
Through the chair, Senator Bishop, these are the loan funds that we actively service, with the exception of doing some accounting work for the bulk fuel program for DCRA. The loan fund is owned by DCRA, but because we have the loan software and the capability, we do provide some minimal support to them. It's mainly on an accounting point of view. The loan officers don't touch bulk fuel, but these would be the loan funds that, yes, they do actively handle applications, underwrite, you know, converse with borrowers, et cetera.
Thank you.
Please continue.
So these are our loan funds. As I just explained, these funds are completely self-sustaining and require no ongoing general fund support. The cost to administer the funds is paid solely from the earnings. The mature funds have performed robustly, paid for their operations, and weathered numerous instances of economic volatility to grow well beyond their initial capitalization, which we will be looking at shortly. Over the years, these programs have assisted thousands of Alaskans. DoD, as I stated, also provides servicing for other state agencies. And over the years, we have developed, again, in-house expertise and the infrastructure required to accomplish those tasks as needed.
If we could pause on that slide for a moment. Ms. Tione Haywood, can you tell me how we're managing the agriculture loans? Is that somewhere else? Is it another program, an additional program that we're not taking up inside of this discussion on revolving loans?
Madam Chair, that is in a different division. It's in the Division of Agriculture within the Department of Natural Resources.
But it is another loan program. So do you know how many loan programs are elsewhere in state government besides just community economic development?
Madam Chair, I know that ADA has their loan funds, I believe. They're very different. As well, there's the student loan funds. There's the agricultural loan fund.
Madam Chair.
Senator Von Imhoff.
Can we have a brief at ease? Because I have a poster of all of this information in my office.
Brief at ease. back on the record? So just to try to, can you tell us if it gets on there well so that you can see it?
So, should I talk about it, or can you even hear me? All right. So essentially what this is just looking at the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development, the Department of Natural Resources, and the Department of Revenue. So all the different loan programs and economic development programs we have in the state, the lending programs, tax credit incentives, business industry development, grant programs, and marketing programs. I mean, all the way from Made in Alaska, Alaska Loyal. And this was, of course, I made a couple years ago. I haven't updated it. But you have the commercial fishing, fisheries enhancement, mariculture, microloan, all the different loans, ADA, all the different ADA programs, you know, Alaska seafood marketing, Alaska travel industry, and, of course, all the tax credits. But things need to be updated. But the fact of the matter is Alaska does quite a bit to stimulate the economy in many, many, many different forms. And the question is how well are they doing and how are they impacting Alaska, and are we getting the bang for the buck that we're doing?
Thank you for that additional detail. And again, that is piece of information that is important to all Alaskans, and specifically important to the Senate Finance Committee, in the sense that Alaska is in a difficult financial situation, and we want to make sure that where we're investing money, that it is being utilized where it should be and not in direct competition with the private sector. Brittany, please continue.
Small Business Economic Development Revolving Loan Fund. This was created in 1987 through a federal grant from the Economic Development Administration, or EDA, and matching funds from the state. The program is intended to finance the startup and expansion of small businesses that create significant long-term employment in areas of the state that were experiencing economic difficulties. DED administers SBED on behalf of the Alaska Industrial and Export Authority, or ADA, through a servicing contract. DED is reimbursed from the fund's earnings, and no general fund appropriations are necessary.
Ms. Tierney Haywood, I do want to point out for the committee members that we have a spread or a sheet specific with more details that we ask the department not to provide in the PowerPoint, as it would be overwhelming. So each of the programs that are being spoken now are in your packet, and each one is on a separate sheet with more backup information for your information and questioning. Senator Von Imhoff.
So, thank you, Madam Chair. So just the first two numbers here, initial capitalization of $6.7 million and current fund value of $10 million. So does that mean that you have, in essence, $10 million to grant at this point, and of it, about half of it, $5.8 million, is outstanding? Is that correct? So you have roughly $4.2 left to grant out. Is that what I'm reading?
Yes, that is correct, Senator Von Imhoff, through the chair. My apologies. So the initial capitalization was $6.7. The fund has grown to $10 million, and we currently have the $5.8 million outstanding principal in loans.
Madam Chair, just one follow-up.
Senator Von Imhoff.
When you say the fund has grown to $10 million, what's made it grown? Is the value of the loans higher, like the assets? Are you marketing, or have you put more money into this revolving loan fund so you have more to lend?
Ms. Chione Haywood.
Through the chair, Senator Von Imhoff, we've had earnings on the fund as well as repayments as the majority of that growth.
Senator Von Imhoff, follow up.
I think that what you may have to have, I will email you my questions, and we'll allow the department time to provide an answer that's more detailed, and I'll include more detail.
Senator Bishop?
So I've been kind of in and out at the Ed Eases doing some phone calls to some institutions myself, but the fund is, the entire fund is owned by ADA, is that correct?
Through the chair, Senator Bishop, yes, the fund is owned by ADA. We actively manage the fund for them, but we do not own the fund.
Thank you.
Ms. Cioni Haywood, when is the last time this particular fund was audited?
Madam Chair, this fund is audited annually.
By legislative?
By ADA. No, it is an independent audit.
So our legislative audit division has not been in to review the practices in these loan programs?
Madam Chair, all of the loan funds are audited as part of the statewide audit on an annual basis.
Thank you.
Continuing on the slide, over the 31-year life of the loan, SBED, it has created or saved 1,000 jobs, it leveraged over $41 million in private funds, and produced over $20 million in loans. Loans cannot be made if a bank is willing to finance the entire project. Applicants must first apply to a bank and receive either a denial or a letter stating that they will only willingly finance part of the project. Loans must result in the creation of jobs in the targeted community. Matching funds are required at a ratio of 1.5 to 1, or 60% of the funds must come from non-governmental sources. And we've already discussed the initial capitalization and the fund value.
Ms. Cioni Haywood, can you talk to us about the delinquency rate and the underlying provisions for issuing the loan? And you did talk about matching funds and others providing other sources. If someone's delinquent, do you issue new loans, or are they off? Are they not available for loans in the future? How does that work?
Madam Chair, this program works with the borrowers. There are instances where we would do a modification to the loan. It depends upon the situation. We will work with the borrower until it does not make sense to work with the borrower anymore, and at that point we will move into taking the asset and dealing with the loan at that point in time. But yes, there are points where we will work with a borrower if they are late or delinquent in their payments to see if we can, you know, get them back on track is always our first step.
Is there standardized procedures for all the revolving loans that we'll talk about today for delinquency, for work, working to see if there's modifications that need to be made at ADA or in your department?
Madam Chair, I can only speak to DED. I'm not sure how ADA handles their loans. Again, we actively manage these loan funds for ADA, so including kind of from the start of the loan application through the point of dealing with anything that is delinquent. So I know ADA in a recent conversation has a 90-day delinquency. We typically look at our loans on a case-by-case basis. And so there's not kind of a hard set 90 days. But once they are delinquent 30 days, then we take and start actively working that loan.
Is there a foundation for, in the revolving funds that we're looking at, that were created in state statute? You are managing something that legislators before us have put in place. Do we have standardized policies and procedures for the application process, looking for similar criteria and whatever exceptions are there? And do we have those same standardized policies for when someone is delinquent on a loan? Or can you just tell me whether there's similarities or if the statutes that were created have caused you to generate individual criteria for each of the programs? Mr. Anderson.
Madam Chair, most of the loan programs have the criteria built into either the regulations or the statutes. This program is done through Title 10 of the Economic Development Act through the federal government. So a lot of the criteria for this program is in agreement that we have with the federal government. The way that we manage the funds, all of them, is at 16 days delinquent, they start being contacted and start being worked. If you have a delinquent loan, you can't receive further credit. We have a collection staff that will work loans all the way from what we call a soft collections standpoint, which is just 16 days past due, through enforced collections, including lawsuits, repossession, fighting bankruptcies, or whatever is needed to recover the funds to get them back in the loan funds so we can revolve them again.
Mr. Anderson, then are they not qualified to receive a new loan, or do you allow refinancing if someone is late and delinquent at the 16 days or the 30 days? Do you allow refinancing to extend the terms of the loan?
We have the ability to do extensions on these loans. We have the ability, if it's determined when we look at a borrower, a citizen, if we have the ability to rehabilitate them by simply maybe changing the terms of their loan so that it fits better with their business, and we can maybe lower their payment by giving them an extension, or something's happened in their life that's a one-time occurrence, we can help them through that, keep their business going, and keep the loan performing.
Senator Machicki, did you have a question?
I can wait, but I just generally, do you keep, I mean, I served on the KPEDD board for some time. I've seen the value of these loans. Do you keep data on this particular program since 87 on the successes, what's happened with these businesses, how many jobs were created, how many people were kept off of social programs because they became successful in an unusual sort of business venture that is sometimes difficult for commercial loan products? Do you have that data to share with us at some point? I know you're not going to have it today, but.
Mr. Anderson.
Through the chair, Senator Machicki, we have the federal government actually requires extensive reporting on this program and the jobs we create in the communities that we assist. And so we do have that information, especially for SBED program. We track jobs created for quite a few of the programs, but not all of them. But we do keep quite a bit of data on the good that the programs are doing, at this, how we're helping the residents, how we're creating jobs, how we're creating economic benefit. And like on the SBD program, one of the statistics that the director stated was there was $41 million in private sector investment that was spurred by these loans. And so that's one of the statistics that we have to keep, is the intention of this loan program is to spur private investment from private banks and things like that.
One follow-up?
Senator Machicki.
And there are two of the, I know you haven't gotten there yet, but two of the loan funds, the Alaska Microloan Revolving Loan Fund and the Small Business Economic Development Loan Fund, both have a sort of higher delinquency rate. Would you say that those two loan funds are somewhat higher risk because of the nature of the loans or the businesses associated with them?
Through the chair, Senator Machicki, what you're seeing with microloan and SBD is these funds are relatively small funds, so one loan shows up as a higher percentage, the law of large numbers.
Thank you.
Senator Von Imhoff, followed by Senator Bishop.
Thank you. How does the state secure collateral in any of these various loans? I mean, do you file UCC filings? Do you have titles, deeds of trust, liens on boats? And then secondly, do you require a personal guarantee from any of your borrowers?
Through the chair, Senator Von Imhoff, we require personal guarantees 100% of the time. The only way to ensure that a loan performs, in my opinion, is for someone to have skin in the game. And we take a UCC on absolutely everything. We take a lien on anything the state spends its money on. We take deeds of trust. The SBD program has a lot of real estate in it. So we have deeds of trust, security agreements, UCCs to perfect that lien. If we do have a problem and we cannot rehabilitate a borrower, we aggressively pursue the return of the state's investment.
Thank you. Senator Bishop?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Since you're managing these funds for ADA, is that accurate?
Through the chair, Senator Bishop, yes.
Okay.
So the funds owned by ADA, and our loan officers do the application, do the underwriting, accounting, et cetera.
That's fine. Now, this is the heart of the question. Do you have an RSA agreement with ADA for these ADA loan officers to execute these loans?
Through the chair, Senator Bishop, we have a memorandum of agreement.
Thank you.
As I recall, of the three bills that we have in front of us, one of the bills is suggesting, well, I'll just give you some overall context. Some of the bills in front of us are asking us to increase the loan values so that you can loan more, that your officers could do larger loans. With 4.6 looks like a little bit high of a delinquency rate for me. So can you tell us how increasing the size may help Alaskans and Alaska business but might put at risk more of the fund capitalization amount or available amount to other lenders? So that's the first question. And then two, one of the proposals is asking to change the loan fund to a grant so that we would start chewing away at the corpus of the fund or the value of the dollars that are out there. So can you comment about that?
Madam Chair, so in HB 56, which is the one that is looking to change the loan limits, that is within the commercial fishing revolving loan fund. So that is one of our oldest and largest funds. Those values, I would like to note that the overall limit that we're able to lend is not changing. It's only certain sections within that, one being for vessels, and it's taking it from 100 to 200,000. There was another for tenders, product quality improvement, and one other. I'm sorry, my notebook is sitting behind me on that loan fund. So the one of the things with that is if I'm going to take the examples of the vessels, I think it probably would be the one that had the impact and would be the most useful within the entire bill structure. But the fund has not been able to really keep up with kind of the market as far as vessels. There's been $100,000 for a fishing vessel is pretty low. And so even sometimes the lower end markets would be closer to 200,000. It would just provide more flexibility for the borrowers and enable the fund to do what it was established to do. So I would say that's that one. I'll leave it at that. And I know that we might have a discussion about the bill at another point in time. The HB 76, which is in reference to the Mariculture Fund, that is the one that has the grant program established within that bill. That bill was modeled off of the Fisheries Enhancement Program, which is one of ours that we're going to talk about here in a bit. Within that loan program, there was money established for kind of planning and construction of hatcheries. Most of those grants were utilized early on. They were limited to, I believe, one per kind of hatchery. Jim might be able to provide more clarification on that. But that is where that language came from, was out of the Fisheries Enhancement.
Ms. Tuney, Haywood, that didn't really answer the question, though I appreciate the information. The question was if we were going to start allowing more grants from that particular fund, whether it would erode the borrowing power of the initial funding that was there. So how will that work for the functionality of the fund itself when we start granting money from a loan program?
Madam Chair, yes, it will make it more difficult to revolve the loan fund, as the loan fund is relatively small. It doesn't make it impossible, but it will pull that money out. You are correct that the money comes out and it will not be repaid as in a loan. So
it would limit the borrowing capabilities for others based on those that receive the cash distribution.
Correct, Madam Chair. It will take that money out, and it would no longer be available to make loans with.
Thank you. Senator Von Imhoff, did you have a question? We'll get to those other loan programs specifically, but go ahead.
Well, I guess what I could, she mentioned earlier, the commercial fishing, I don't know if it was the revolving loan fund, but you felt that there was a need, $100,000 wasn't really enough, you needed a higher limit at this point. So the question that I have for you is, in a roundabout way, why do you think borrowers can't get a traditional bank loan from the two or three, four banks that we have here in Alaska, many of them locally owned?
Mr. Anderson.
Through the Chair, Senator Von Imhoff. Under the Commercial Fishing Loan Program, one of the primary things that we deal with is limited entry permits. And limited entry permits are constitutional creation. The state of Alaska maintains ultimate domain over its fisheries, and so it created only two entities that can lean on a permit. So if a permit has to be used as collateral, then one of the two agencies that are allowed to do that, CFAB and us, would have to be involved. A lot of times when we're talking about a $100,000 boat, we're talking about somebody who is very young, very new to the industry, has not much of a credit history, not much of a net worth, but has put in the years to be a commercial fisherman. A $100,000 boat is a very low entry-level vessel. They're not bankable people yet. And through this program, we can get them into the fisheries, they can start fishing, they can earn a living, build a net worth, build the credit, and build the history they need to then upgrade a vessel through traditional financing. And that's one of our goals through the program.
Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I heard two separate issues. Number one, limited entry permits are such that only two entities, CFAB and your commercial Economic Development Corporation, can put liens on. Have you talked to the banking representatives in terms of is this something that they would be interested in utilizing as a lien? Is there a way, a mechanism that banks would be A, interested, and B, then should we put a mechanism so that they can participate?
Through the Chair, Senator Von Imhoff, that would be way above my purview to have that conversation.
Okay, then I have one last question, Madam.
Senator Von Imhoff.
Your second comment was these young, new fishermen, not bankable people yet. So the state is taking on a risk of these young, new fishermen that are not bankable yet, number one. Number two, we are offering pretty low interest rates, at least from what I've seen in these previous bills. If the banks won't take them, why should the state assume the risk and not rate it appropriately consummate with the risk?
Senator Von Imhoff, the Commercial Fishing Revolving Loan Fund was created by the state of Alaska to keep its fisheries primarily resident and to invest in its residents and build this legacy industry. And so the state of Alaska had decided that it was willing to undertake this risk to support this industry. And the loan program's been in existence for more than 45 years and is quite robust and doing well and has been successful in meeting those goals.
Senator Bishop, followed by Senator Hoffman, so followed by Senator Michicki.
Thank you. So the 18-year-old fisherman could have a commercial limited entry permit that comes to you for a boat loan too, correct?
Mr. Anderson.
Through the Chair, Senator Bishop, yes.
And so there is some surety right there, is there, right?
Mr. Anderson.
Through the chair, Senator Bishop. Yes, sir. We consider 80% of the permit you're purchasing as collateral. The other 20% is generally from them saving their cruise shares.
Right. And that And that permit belongs to the state at the end of the day.
They have an equitable interest in the permit. They do not have an ownership interest in the permit. It belongs to the state and can be revoked at any time without compensation.
Thank you.
Thanks, Senator Bishop. Mr. Anderson, Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a comment. The program has worked well for the state of Alaska, and the provisions that Senator Van Imhoff are saying can the traditional banking industry be utilized. I think the control to keep those permits in Alaska are better kept by the current system. And I think that the risk to the state is minimal when you look at the delinquency rates. The state has a vested interest, as was explained, and I think the program from Alaska's viewpoint to encourage fisheries, the amount of jobs that and income it provides to young Alaskans far outweigh any minimal risk that the program poses.
Thank you, Senator Hoffman. Senator Michicki.
Madam Chair, I'm okay. I think the part that's probably a little less difficult to understand is the fact that a permit is not security for several reasons. One is that the individual never actually has ownership. Again, the state can essentially take the permit for various reasons. It's not traditional security. But if you read Title 16, Article 8, Commercial Fishing Loan Act, it has all of the details about the fact that you have to be a resident and all of the other challenges that come with a loan. But I think that's one of the things that's difficult for a commercial lender. It's like you really don't have security in a permit, and often the value in a vessel is not a traditional asset, right? Therefore, the rates would be so high if they were to take that risk. This program has worked very well. We have Alaskans all over the state in many fisheries with a low delinquency rate that has gotten people started, that has helped them to earn a living for their families, participate actively in their communities and other local taxes and other benefits to the state. I personally don't see, I don't have any difficulty with the Commercial Fishing Revolving Loan Fund. I think it's been very well run. I think it's been very successful, and it's so important. Again, I keep pointing to the people that these are people that are making their own way, that are earning a living for their families, that are keeping their communities strong. When I think of what we pay out and so many other things for folks that are not as successful in the billions on an annual basis, and I think of what we do with revolving loan funds for helping people, Alaskans, only Alaskans, to earn a living, I'm very supportive of, and we're talking about the Commercial Fishing Revolving Loan Fund right now. I'm amazingly surprised at its success and very supportive of its continuation.
Senator Hoffman, followed by Senator Von Imhoff.
One other comment that I would like to make is that even with this program that helps Alaskan fishermen, we still have a major problem in the state with fishing permits in the state of Alaska exiting the state in the last decade at an alarming rate. And I know that many people have looked at that, but that is something that needs to be looked at again, because it is with these types of programs we are able to slow that exodus out of the state of Alaska, and we need to do this and much more to keep those permits as much as possible, legally possible, in the state of Alaska to provide jobs for Alaskans.
Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do appreciate the discussion, but this presentation actually has 9 different loan programs, not just fisheries and not just permits. There are 9 different programs, all treated completely different, all looking at, have different terms, different rates, different criteria, managed differently under a different program. You stated that we have lots of federal data. Federal data requires extensive, federal requirements have extensive data on how the programs are impacting the economy. Of all 9, or just a couple of them? So the question is Senator Hoffman and Senator Marchicki, they're much more familiar with the Commercial Fishing Revolving Loan Fund. And I look at revolving, and what I see revolving as in usually you get paid back on a pretty quickly basis, and then you borrow it again. This is maximum term of 15 years. This is, I mean, I don't know what part is revolving. Certainly not for the person, not for the borrower. 15 years is not revolving. Maybe it's from the perspective of your department. I just find the nomenclature kind of funny. Commercial Charter Fisheries Revolving Loan Fund, that's for permits. That was done in 2012. I mean, there's a lot of different loans here. I guess my whole point is if we're going to take the risk on these young borrowers on assets that may or may not be transferable, just be commiserate. Just have the risk be appropriately mitigated. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Von Imhoff. If we we're down a little bit of a rabbit trail, but Senator Hoffman, you've been around these chambers and in these halls for multiple years, and I am wondering why we haven't, for any permit that leaves the state of Alaska, why we don't terminate those in 10 years, not come back once they leave the state. Why don't we just dissolve the permit, or 10 or 20, whatever the value of the investment could be amortized over, and extinguish the permits?
Well, I think the problem is that there are constitutional problems that we're facing, and the biggest one, I think, is the right of United States citizens to travel. And if there was a simple and clean answer, I think we would have thought about it. But aside from these loans, the bigger problem is how do we get those permits back to Alaska? I think that that Bristol Bay Native Corporation has, we've allowed them to acquire permits and then sell them in a short time frame to other fishermen. I don't know if that program is still in existence, but we as a state need to look at that industry, because the permits that are going out of state are being bought up by people that have more financial resources and are competing with much higher technical equipment than Alaskans can afford.
Senator Hoffman, just along that dialogue, I know we've had buyback programs before and other things that are out there, and maybe even one proposed this last session. Why don't we issue more permits to the people for shorter durations so that they don't become as high volume or high dollar prices to drive competition? So if we can't bring them back because of the Interstate Commerce Clause and being able to treat people unfairly, why don't we issue other permits to create competition in our own state waters so that local Alaskans can fish and that they're non-transferable permits?
Madam Chair, I think the problem is that the industry has to be highly capitalized, and if you give shorter permits and it brings the economics into question. There were issues discussed about shorter time periods, but then again, the salmon only run when they run, and we have to set, Fish and Game has to set those schedules according to that time frame. So it is a very complicated question, and I know I've had conversations with the commissioner, Sam Cotton, for decades, but the solution seems elusive.
Thank you, Senator Hoffman, for indulging me in understanding more about the fish wars. Senator Bishop.
That would make Title IV look like a nursery rhyme if we went down that road.
So that's an inside joke for those at home following this conversation. We have a Title IV rewrite that's about 122 sections and over 100 pages long, and so that's what Senator Bishop is chuckling with me about. Senator Machicki.
Yeah, Madam Chair, there's a lot of things we would do differently if it wasn't for that pesky Constitution. The Interstate Commerce Clause is problematic, but it's more problematic in Alaska than anywhere else. It's very difficult to hang on to assets in our state. And you have dentists showing up from Seattle with, you know, $500,000 in their pocket. They can pick up a high-performance boat in Bristol Bay when the years are good, plunk down their 130 or 40 or whatever the current value is for a permit, and they can fish it. If you were to put risk, so you have to apply the risk equally if you're going to limit permits, and what that would result is uncertainty for throughout the entire supply chain, and that uncertainty would be very difficult, more difficult again on Alaskan fishermen. This particular program was put in place, and we've been talking about the Comfish Revolving Loan Program, was put in place to try to equalize that. On an asset for local Alaskans that's very difficult to obtain, whose value can change dramatically from season to season, depending on run strength and salmon prices or other fisheries prices. Value of a Bristol Bay permit can go from $150,000 down to $40,000 in a couple of bad years. So that's something a bank's not interested in taking a loan on, but it's something that value will come back for a dedicated fisherman within a couple of years as well. So it's complicated. But I think we've put some things in place to try to keep Alaskans in the fishery so that the money is not bleeding out of state and going back to the other states in the Northwest. Again, we're not a colony. We live here, and I think some of the programs have tried to offset those effects.
Senator Stevens?
Again, Madam Chair, you caught me thinking. I don't know if I can put my thoughts together, but I guess what I've heard from the department is they don't believe this is in competition with banks, that, in fact, it makes me wonder if this program did not exist, where would our permits be? More and more of them would be out of state. Fewer young people would have an opportunity to getting into the fishery. We have a graying of the fleet. I just look around my hometown, and all of the fishermen are about my age, and we should have younger people who have a means to get into that fishery. And this is speaking at least to a commercial fishing loan program. It's had an enormous impact. It's done good things in Alaska, and I certainly support it.
Thanks.
So maybe you could comment on the issue of the banks. And you didn't indirectly say that you only take these loans on when banks have refused to. Maybe you could reiterate that.
Through the chair, Senator Stevens, not all but many of our loan programs do require a bank denial. So I would, excuse me, there are overlaps between our constituencies and the private sector, but they're not identical. Really, the primary purpose is to provide loans to Alaskans and industries that don't have that traditional finance, and hence when these statutes were created in many of the programs, there were those bank denial requirements that were placed on them. We are here to serve a public policy goal, which is how these got established, and again, our borrowers do tend to be starting out. They run small operations, live in rural areas typically. Oftentimes are not familiar with financing, are engaged in kind of pretty high-risk businesses. Also, we have very low loan limits. $400,000 in commercial lending is really a microloan if we're talking commercial fishing. Our microloan program is far less than that. And so there have been restrictions built into these programs to really limit that competition factor. I'm not saying that there's not some overlap, But there is differences as well, particularly between, you know, we are pursuing those public policy goals that were set out by this body.
Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So you're not receiving a lot of complaints from the banking industry that you are taking on loans that they would prefer to take on?
Through the chair, Senator Stevens, I don't have, I haven't had those conversations. People are not approaching me on that. I know that there is the thought that we are competition. Again, we do have some overlapping constituencies, but there are also a lot of differences between DED, CFAB, and private sector lending.
That's right. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Stevens. Thank you, Ms. Joni Haywood. If we could move on to slide number six. Senator Bishop, did you have a comment?
Just a brief comment. You know, I for one, and our family started out in 1977 with we had five permits in the family, and we decided we was going to go into the processing business. So we would go to the bank, our home bank, and finance our motors and gear and whatnot. And just for an example, in 1984, a 200-horse outboard cost about $9,000, and today it's north of $30,000 for that same motor, just one motor. So, but when you start a fish processing plant, as Senator Stevens knows, it takes a lot of capital just to get your stores in place for the pack. And we didn't have that line of credit with our own bank, and so we used CFAB. Once we got up and running and got a track record going, then we could go back to our local bank, which we did every year, and go in and get X numbers of hundreds of thousands of dollars to capitalize that season. So we're one that used it and then stepped all the way back into the private banking system. But it was a bridge to help us get there.
Thank you, Senator Bishop. Ms. Joni Haywood, slide six.
Thank you so much. Slide six. This one is looking at the Rural Development Initiative Fund. It was created in 2000 to provide financing to small businesses and create long-term meaningful employment in rural communities. The program provides capital that is difficult to obtain in rural Alaska. RDIF replaced a similar program that was administered for many years by the Department of Community and Regional Affairs. DED administers RDIF on behalf of ADA through a servicing contractor memorandum agreement. We are reimbursed from the fund's earnings, and no general fund support is necessary. Over the 18-year life of this loan fund, over 600 jobs have been created or saved as a result of these loans. The RDIF loans are usually used for a startup or expansion of small businesses. The loans must create jobs within the targeted community, and a reasonable amount of non-state money, at least 10%, must be invested in the project. Often the projects are a combination of a bank loan, borrower capital, or seller financing in addition to the RDIF funding. Since the inception of the RDIF, loans have been made to diverse businesses across the state in different sectors. They can be used in a variety of ways to create or retain jobs. So a quick sample of types of companies: taxi companies, newspaper, freight vessel, RV park, dress shop, pet grooming, computer repair, auto parts stores, etc. The fund, again, started in 2000. It was initially capitalized at $3.42 million and has grown to over $7.5 million today.
Slide 7.
Slide 7 is revolving the microloan fund. The Alaska Microloan Fund was created in 2012. This legislation established a public policy goal of promoting economic development in Alaska by assisting small businesses and entrepreneurs who are currently not in a position to seek traditional financing. This access to facilitate startup expansion and job creation throughout Alaska. It has a specific policy emphasis on rural communities. The goal is for the business to become stable enough to move to traditional bank financing and refinance microloan as additional capital needs become necessary. Applicants can use this fund for working capital, equipment, construction, or other commercial purposes. A reasonable amount of non-state funds is required, usually at least 10%. It is determined as the project is evaluated. A bank denial is required for loan request of $35,000 and greater. This threshold for a bank denial was developed in consultation with private sector financing community at the time the original legislation was developed. Loan growth is developing. Out of the 33 applications received, 14 loans have been made. This initial capitalization was $2.5 million. The current loan fund is $2.58 million to date. I will note that the delinquency rate of that at 6% is from one loan. Again, we have kind of a small fund here. Slide 8 is the Commercial Fishing Revolving Loan Fund. It was created in 1972 to ensure Alaskans had access to their fisheries. The program promotes Alaskan ownership and development of predominantly resident fleet. The fund has played a major role in keeping Alaska's fisheries resident and has been an effective tool for assisting the next generation of Alaskans to enter the fisheries. The average age of a borrower is more than 7 years younger than the average age of a permit holder. The fund is totally self-sufficient. It has received no general fund support since 1985, in spite of extreme challenges to the commercial fishing industry that it's faced over the years. The fund continues to generate solid cash flow to cover loan demand and operating costs. Over the 46-year life of the fund, thousands of Alaskans have been assisted by this program. There's a number of different types of loans that you can purchase. We've already talked about some of those, such as limited entry permits, vessels, product quality improvement, engine efficiency, individual fishing quota shares. We also have a program to help pay back past due taxes to the IRS, where the limited entry permit might be in danger of being seized. The fund started at $60.2 million and has grown to $128.7 million today.
If we could pause for a moment.
Sure.
Slide 8, Senator Maticki, did you have a question? I'm trying to match up the date that you just said for... What date did you say that the Commercial Fishing Revolving Loan Fund was created?
It was created in 1972.
Thank you very much. Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you. This is good information. This is good information. I actually really appreciate it. I understand the purpose of this particular one. I mean, again, we're talking about eight different programs, and I understand the purpose of the commercial fishing and the explanation of the dentist coming from Seattle with $500,000 in his pocket and being a good borrower. I get it. What would be helpful is, though, just kind of a look back of this is how the loan has worked over time. This is the things that we've accomplished with it. We've done 400 boats, 6,000 borrowers. Here are the Alaskan borrowers. Here's the years where it did better than others. Here's been the delinquency rate over time. I mean, those are the kind of things that if you communicate the type of program that it is and the data, then new senators like myself won't push so hard, and I will be informed with information and the purpose and the success. No general fund since 1985. That should be bold and highlighted. It's pretty cool. So over time with these different loans and how they're successful, and then an honest critique. This is why we think it works. This is why we think it could be better. Here are niches that we're missing. Here's maybe this loan is not really working, or maybe we don't need it. I mean, things like that. And so an honest assessment of how they interact and how they affect Alaska's economy, I think would be really helpful.
Senator Von Imhoff, that's why we're here today. I'd like to see some standardization of loan requirements. If the state is in the business of making loans, I'm not sure why you have to do everything uniquely. There's got to be some efficiency for your loan officers in providing some basic criteria for these economic opportunities to incentivize Alaskans and provide for Alaskans an opportunity to own and start up their own businesses in our state. But each of these unique programs make it difficult for loan officers in having to understand each set of criteria instead of standardizing some base level for applicants and entry and processes that are consistent so that we can more efficiently process this. And, you know, Senator Von Imhoff, I've got to tell you that, like you, when I first joined this table or that in the House of Representatives, you can sometimes pick a scab that people, you know, get all prickly about in the sense that you're hitting home on some programs that individual communities around our state benefit from in different ways. All of us have commercial fishermen in our districts. If you look at how commercial fishermen are distributed across our population. So these are of interest to all communities, but some of us have more understanding of them than others. We have commercial fishermen sitting at this table. We have doctors. We have people in oil and gas. We have people in mining. We have people in banking. We have people from the nonprofit sector, from the education community, business operators, transportation operators, aircraft pilots. You name it, the reason we have a citizen legislature is because we have a group of Alaskans that come together with a particular set of skills. And Senator Von Imhoff, you've worked in banking. Welcome to the table. Please continue. Senator Bishop.
Yes, just along Senator Von Imhoff's questioning and comments, good, and they're good comments, on this initial capitalization of $60 million, and, you know, and she made the analogy you should bolden the 1985 no GF since then. Just for take that one step further, can you show, I would maybe go so far as to say show the 1977 capitalization and subsequent capitalizations to 1985, and then from that point forward, that would just, it'd be kind of interesting to see how the money flowed.
Thank you, Senator Bishop. And Alaskans want to know the answers to these questions, too, even though there's great experience at this table understanding the benefits of these programs. The reason we're taking morning to talk about these is Alaskans are asking us to look in our closets, per se, and to make sure that we're doing things effectively and efficiently and why we're doing some things. Why are we still issuing loans when Alaskans are having a conversation about reducing the size of state government? I mean, these all are interconnected, and the people of Alaska want to know. They want to know, and they want to understand why we're in this particular segment of the economy when the private sector does offer opportunities. But as has been appropriately stated, the collateralization of some of the programs that we're using is very different than what a private sector bank might use. And in some cases, as Senator Bishop stated, it's a bridge. I believe someone else said that at this table also. It's a bridge to an opportunity to get a larger business moving forward. With that, we're on page 8. Any other comments on page 8? Are we ready to move to page 9?
Slide 9 is on the Commercial Charter Fisheries Revolving Loan Fund. It was created in 2012 in response to the National Marine Fisheries Service instituting the Charter Halibut Limited Access Program. This legislation established a public policy goal of promoting resident ownership of the charter halibut permits by Alaskans that may not be able to attain financing elsewhere. There is also the ability to refinance a charter vessel up to $100,000. The applicant must have a regular long-term note in place of the minimum 12 months before it can be considered for refinancing of the program. The program cannot be used. It's only used for the charter halibut permit. It is not used for packages. Those cannot be financed. The fund started at $5 million. It has grown slightly to $5.08 million at this time.
Mr. Tunique, who is managing the where do your the corpus of your funds, where are they residing, your actual fund balances? Are they, is the permanent fund investing them? Is the revenue commissioner investing those for our behalf for the rates of interest? Who's managing those assets?
Madam Chair, that's managed through Department of Revenue, Division of Treasury.
Thank you.
So slide 10, Fisheries Enhancement Revolving Loan Fund. This program was created in 1976 and has been instrumental in the development of Alaska salmon hatcheries. The program is intended to make loans available to the regional aquaculture corporations and private nonprofit aquaculture corporations for the planning and implementation of salmon enhancement and rehabilitation activities. The development of the Alaska Hatchery Program has been an evolutionary process. Several attempts at hatchery production of salmon have been undertaken by the federal government and private industry, but were largely unsuccessful because hatchery technology was crude and underdeveloped. The program sought to overcome those problems of the past and facilitate the development of a viable salmon enhancement system. Over the 42 years of this program, there has been great strides in technology and production. And despite the extreme volatility experienced in the development of Alaska's hatcheries, the fund is meeting its mission and has continued to generate solid cash flow to cover loan demand and operating costs. There are currently 29 salmon hatcheries operating in the state. 25 facilities are by private nonprofit corporations. In 2017, the commercial fleet caught about 47 million hatchery-produced salmon. The harvest was worth an estimated $331 million in first wholesale value and $162 million in ex-vessel value. The fund started with $84.7 million and has grown to over $123 million today.
I have questions on this one.
Sure.
Ms. Tierney Haywood, the delinquency rate, what period of time is your delinquency rate on the slides that we're watching? Is that just last year?
The delinquency rate is as of March 31st, and so that would be the loans that were delinquent at that time. Delinquency, that is a snapshot.
So we would like to see a much longer view of that. That's why I was trying to understand how we have a zero delinquency when I read in the paper earlier this year that I believe the community of Cake was recycling a hatchery program from one nonprofit, and I'm not going to get the numbers correct. This is an inaccurate statement, but there was some amount of money. I thought it was $18 million owed to the state of Alaska that we wrote off, and then we resold the hatchery for and the assets for a much lower value, and it has something to do with, as I recall, a hydro project, and that the new project was going to utilize the heat, I think, from the dam to get it. So we have delinquency rates that I think may mislead the committee at this point. Can you speak to that? I know that somebody owed us a large amount of money.
Absolutely, Madam Chair. So again, the delinquency rate is looking at the percentage of loans in the portfolio that are past due on payments. Cake is an example where the decision was made to not continue to loan. It then moved into a facilitated sale was attempted with the regional association, aquacultural association. It did not pan out, and so then we moved into a foreclosure process. And so the asset was taken in, and then the process is to go and try and recoup as much as we can from those assets that we held. And so I believe we aren't actually completely done with that process in its entirety. We do hold still a warehouse to be sold, and we are still doing cost recovery on the salmon returns. I believe the number, although I would need to provide this to double check on it, is about $2.5 million that was recovered.
Ms. Jenny Haywood, I think that we should actually audit that particular chain of events. And the reason why I think that we may need an audit is because I just would like to know from a common sense perspective, how do we have a loan out for $18 million with assets of two? How did we get to that point? I know some of it would have been interest delinquent interest that would have been compounding over time, and so what happened with that particular transaction? And this is not meant to be derogatory towards an entire hatchery could have had an infection some way in the salmon and could not get a rate of return. But how, from a management perspective on our side of the house, did we not recognize trouble, and why did we keep loaning or not do something before the assets that were there exceeded, at least to this extent, the value of the property that remained? Okay. Can you provide me any information?
Madam Chair.
Brief at ease.
We're back on the record.
So, Madam Chair, I will say that, you know, with the hatchery program, there is a lot of volatility within this industry. There were issues across the industry with the hatcheries they tried to survive the farm fish crisis. Exxon Valdez lost runs, et cetera. This particular hatchery did suffer some water supply issues. And quality issues. There were runs that did not return, which always kind of, you know, further complicates the loans. And so the loans were over a substantial period of time that were made, and so those decisions did span time. It came to a point where it was decided that, again, this was no longer feasible, and we worked to try and do the facilitated sale and go through that process in the sale of this asset.
Ms. Chuney-Haywood, I appreciate that those comments. The issue from a finance perspective is the department and how the department is acting on those, not the challenges, because we do know that hatcheries or, you know, boats can be in a bad storm and need great repairs. But the issue is how the department is handling those events and how we're protecting the state while we're working with a community or with an individual that is having a business experience that is unexpected, as you've said before. And what highlighted me on this is your delinquency rate of zero with 122 outstanding loans for a value of $88.3 million with zero delinquency. Are we writing off loans? What's the process for writing off loans? Why? And I've seen it, I think I saw it back on a different one, but it was lower loan values. So no one in 122 loans is late over 16 days, or how are we calculating that?
Madam Chair, so that is correct. On March 31st, we did not have a loan payment that was late. Once a loan is non-performing, the possibility of once a loan is non-performing and the possibility of rehabilitation does not exist, and it's no longer classified as a loan receivable, it's not included in the calculation of the delinquency ratio. The account is then reclassified as a judgment or a doubtful account, and it is reflected on the balance sheet. In this case, the state of Alaska, it is reflected in the Comprehensive Annual Financial Report, or CAFR, as it's commonly referred to. So the delinquency rate on a loan that is not paid by the due date, rather than using the common method of waiting for it to age 60 days to report, this gives kind of more of an immediate indication of the loan degradation so that it can be reacted on. I'm not sure that answers your question in its entirety.
Ms. Judy Haywood, what I'd like is a written definition from regulations on how delinquency is determined. And then if I'm looking at this slide as of March 31st, 2018, am I looking back a year or am I looking back 3 months?
Madam Chair, the delinquency rate is a snapshot in time. You're basically looking at right now. What is delinquent? What loans do we have that we did not receive expected payments on right now? When a loan becomes unrecoverable, we know that we're not going to be expecting any more loan payments. We follow a standard charge-off process. And so, yeah, this loan doesn't show up. We have no loans that have late payments. These payments on these loans are due once a year. They're due January 1st of every year. It allows the hatcheries time to process their cost recovery, get their payments from their processors, and make their payments. So this time of year, the payments have been made. On the existing hatcheries we have right now are not having difficulties. Salmon seasons have been good. Their cost recovery has been good. Their prices have been good. So they've made all their payments. So a delinquency rate is just the shot of what's going on right now in the loan portfolio. It doesn't have any depth to it, really.
Mr. Anderson, our question then wasn't clear when we asked the department what we wanted. We wanted a delinquency rate to look at the lifetime of the program, or a delinquency rate over a longer, short of time than this particular moment. Because what finance is trying to determine is how much loans you're writing off that we don't see unless we read in detail the CAFR or the single audit. So the whole point of today was understanding how much loan and the value of those loans to the people of Alaska, which I think everyone at this table supports. We appreciate that we have a vehicle and a tool available to the department to create jobs and opportunities in Alaska. The purpose of today was to understand the management that's happening and the delinquency rates as we extend these loans, to understand more thoroughly that the bills before us, whether we should actually consider increasing the size of the loan, the terms of the loan, which goes back to Senator Von Imhoff, is that these may not be under a traditional definition of a revolving loan program. It's more fixed rate. I don't know what the adequate definition of it is, but we have requests in our files in these three bills before us that are asking to extend microloan programs to longer-term loans upwards of 15 years, I believe. Senator Von Imhoff, followed by Senator Bishop, followed by Senator Majicki.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just surprised that you didn't include with each of these loans the amount listed in the CAFR for the bad debt write-off. I think that's pertinent to just see what that actually is. Delinquency is one piece of it, but then there's bad debt. Every loan program has it. It happens. So what is the percentage of bad debt on any given time? What's the percentage of bad debt on the new loans for that year of the entire loan portfolio? things of that nature. I mean, sure, I can go through the CAFR and look at that, but one of the reasons why you're here is to provide us the whole scenario, the good and the bad, and then explain. This is, hey, it happened to be just one big thing down in CAKE, or this is a multiple different weaknesses that we see in this particular portfolio, we're addressing them, or the economy, or whatever it may be. But not having the bad debt, saying that you have 0% delinquency rate at this time, and not including any of the other information about what was put in the CAFR, that's incomplete. Thanks.
Thank you, Senator Bishop, followed by Senator Machika.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just again on page 10 on this fund, because we see it's got quite a bit of money in it, right? And that's good. When was the initial capitalization, and do you have another bullet? Has this not been funded since when? You
know, 1976, Senator Bishop.
And when was the, so it's had never had another dollar put in it since 1976?
Mr. Anderson.
Through the chair, Senator Bishop. I'm not sure of the exact date there was capitalizations done, but the capitalizations ended in the late 70s.
Thank you. Just like you made mention on the commercial fishing loans, you know, you highlighted that, and it'd just be good to maybe highlight them all.
Thank you. Senator Machiki.
Thank you. Just I'm not sure what we asked for, but I think if you did a couple of sheets on each, I think you hear additional questions that people are asking. I certainly appreciate what you do. I know what the vast majority of these programs have done in our communities. I'm very supportive. Can you explain cost recovery and on that particular issue, whether or not the department for the Fisheries Enhancement Revolving Loan Fund, can the department cost recover after a loan has been called, if you will, to try to recoup some of your costs into the future?
Through the chair, Senator Machiki, the cost recovery that I referred to, so the hatcheries, I think I need to parse this out a little bit. The hatcheries do cost recovery in order to recoup their cost and pay back their loans, hopefully. The cost recovery that I referred to is that when we foreclosed on CAKE, there were still fish out at sea, and so we entered into a contract in order to harvest those fish when they returned as an effort to get some of the money back into the fund and recoup on this loan.
Senator Machiki.
So how many years, is it a terminal fishery or is there returning around to that area because of the hatchery production?
Mr. Anderson.
Through the chair, Senator Machiki, we still have 2 years that runs coming back. It's a terminal harvest. When the hatchery failed, there were fish in the barn, and we did make sure that they survived and were released. We actually have a lien on all fish at sea and all eggs, and so we enforced our lien and hired a seiner and entered into a contract with a processor to catch the fish every year. Unfortunately, some of the runs failed that were coming back, but we have hopes of a good run this summer is what we're looking for. At least indications are it should be good, but and that's the same thing that the hatcheries do to try to self-sustain their operations, is a certain amount of the fish that come back get caught by them and sold to be able to pay their bills.
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair, just one brief one if I can.
Certainly, Senator.
Yeah, I just think that's, we're not talking a lot in detail, and if folks have not been involved with these, I had the pleasure of serving on Cook Inlet Aquaculture Board, and we had cost recovery for fish that we produced, but you know, all Alaskans benefit. This is not when you go down to the Seward Silver Salmon Derby, those are hatchery fish, right? They're all over the state. This is not specifically a calm fish thing. It's a all Alaskans thing, but it's one of the few where you get to send your product out into the oceans of the world and then have cost recovery, which is why they've had a pretty high rate. And I'm interested to see if there are other outstanding loans. Other delinquent loans through the years. I know in Cooking at Aquaculture, we had tough years when we had bad returns, but we made it. And so I'm looking forward to that information as well.
Ms. Joni Haywood, again, this is not, this is about accounting. It's about the math. It's not about the program, even though we have interest in the program and understanding who benefits from it. Alaskans expect us, if we're going to offer loan programs, to manage them efficiently and effectively, and we are trying to understand that. So specifically, Senator Von Imhoff has requested actual numbers on all the programs that you just presented us with the debt write-off, the charge-off, or whatever has been done on these loans so that we get a full picture of the money in and the money out and the costs associated with the program. And we will have a difficult time moving pieces of legislation if we don't have that information quickly. If we could continue, slide 10. If we're done there, 11.
Moving to slide 11. Mariculture Revolving Loan Fund was created in the legislature in 2012. This program is intended to help Alaskan-owned mariculture operations to diversify economic opportunities in coastal communities by providing financing to mariculture businesses that may not have other financing available. There, you do have to have a permitted mariculture farm location that happens through Fish and Game and must have experience and training in the mariculture industry and be an Alaska resident for 24 consecutive months prior to us receiving the application. The fund started at $5 million, and the current fund value is $5.1 million today.
Can we pause on that for just a moment? Brief at ease. Ms. Joni Haywood, this is one of the Mariculture Fund. We have some interest from a bill in front of us to remove the one-time limitation for grants that you had said had been utilized early on in the program, which I've already asked about. Would that devalue the amount available for others in a revolving loan? And I believe the answer was yes. Is this one not also similar to the fisheries enhancement, but it's with some products that don't return like fish do? Is there an enhancement program in that bill? Do you recall?
Madam Chair, I believe there's a separate enhancement bill that was HB 128. So there were companion bills, HB 128 and then HB 76.
Thank you. Okay, please continue.
Madam Chair, any other questions on mariculture before I move to the next slide?
No.
Thank you. Alaska Capstone Avionics Revolving Loan Fund. This program was created by the legislature in 2008 as part of a joint industry effort to improve aviation safety and economic efficiency in Alaska by financing the installation of a new generation of avionics. The FAA, or Federal Aviation Administration, required a commitment from the state of Alaska to make the avionics accessible before it was willing to complete the $900 million infrastructure build-out of the Capstone, or what's now called Next-Gen Avionics System. The revolving loan fund has met this need, and the build-out has proceeded. However, due to slow governmental rulemaking, general aviation community has not embraced the technology, and most likely there will not be widespread adoption of the system until the FAA mandate requires it, which is now set at 2020. We believe that as this date approaches, the fund will see heavy use. So there's a specific type of equipment that the FAA has gone in to designate that must be installed. Aircraft in Alaska equipped with this has had 47% fewer accidents and 33% fewer fatalities.
Ms. Joni Haywood, if we extinguish the program and set a date prior to 2020, do you think it would motivate aviation to access the funds sooner rather than later?
Madam Chair, that's an interesting question. It very well could be. I'm not in that industry, so I...
It's an unfair question. I apologize. I'm just wondering how we can get implementation faster to utilize a product that has been made available for a very worthwhile purpose. And so if we reduced either the time availability or the funding, folks, if they knew about it, might take advantage of it. But if they didn't know about it, they're going to be stuck in 2020 per your description in meeting those requirements. Senator Olson, followed by Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Capstone is a fairly expensive investment that many private pilots are not going to be investing in unless they have resources that are excessive. And even the air taxis that are out there are looking for waivers for that to try and be able to operate without it. It is true that there has been a significant amount of a significant decrease in the number of accidents that are out there, but it's not all necessarily because of Capstone. There are other, the Medallion program has been very effective in that process. And so I tend to look at I've never used Capstone. I've never had, and haven't had a couple air taxis certificates. So, you know, those of us that are looking at from a critical standpoint do not necessarily, I'd be pessimistic about it's coming on.
Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I am familiar with Capstone. Senator Olson is correct that it's very, very expensive. It depends on, of course, the airplane type and exactly how detailed you want to go with this equipment. Technology is bringing the amount down. I think the FAA seems to be more of the limiting factor versus putting a limit on this loan. But you are right, Senator McKinnon, that I don't know if a lot of organizations actually understand that this loan is available. For example, if you've worked with the Alaska Airmen's Association and have put it into their newsletter on more than one occasion, which goes out to 4,000, I believe, pilots around Alaska. I personally have used the Capstone Avionics, and it's incredible. And it absolutely, I believe, can save lives because it shows exactly where the airplane is, how far above and below and beside you, and the call number. So you can get on your calls on your radio and say, hey, N1926 Mike, I know exactly where you are. Hey, I'm over here to the west of you at 3 o'clock or east of 3 o'clock. And those are big deals. But it's like $8,000 to $10,000 per airplane, if not more.
Well, we've highlighted it today, so hopefully those that don't have it may inquire about the Alaska Capstone Avionic Revolving Loan Fund. Senator Michicki.
Madam Chair, that's actually a question I have, not only about that loan fund, but the Sport Fish Charter Loan Fund, which is highly underutilized, and I know why it was created. But do you get out, advertise in those industries so people know some of the products that are available, which, like you said, the hardware for a charter fishery is relatively easy if you've got history for commercial loans, but some of the permit part of it is more difficult. I'm interested in just when you provide the other information, it'd be nice to know what you do for outreach on these products that the state makes available to the user groups.
Would you like a response now, or did you want that in the written?
Well, we're getting close to 11, but okay. That's up to the chair.
Response now is fine so that you don't have to write it down.
Okay. Thank you. We do a number of different outreach trips and different avenues. I would like to let Jim Anderson speak in more detail to that, please.
Mr. Anderson.
Through the chair, Senator Michicki, we conduct quite a bit of outreach in various ways. The states tried to cut down on travel, so we've relied on going with newsletters, contacting organizations that represent the stakeholders. When we do other outreach trips, we try to combine all of them so that we're talking to, so that we can speak about any of these programs at any time. We connect with the Alaska Airmen's Association, the Alaska Air Carriers Association, the Alaska Charter Association even had some commentary on the bill. So that's something that we've done, is we seek out the organizations that represent large amounts of people and try to get our word out that way.
Thank you so much. If we could move on to the last slide, I would like to allow the commissioner an opportunity to address the committee.
Absolutely. So alternative energy conservation, I don't have much on this one, so I'll be brief. The purpose is to provide commercial business owners access to affordable loans to purchase, construct, and install alternative energy systems or energy conservation improvements in commercial buildings. Must be for the purchase, construction, and installation of alternative energy systems or conservation improvements in commercial buildings. Alaska resident, of course, is all of our programs. And the fund started at $2.5 million, has grown slightly to $2.75 million today, and there are no loans outstanding at this time.
Thank you for joining us in Senate Finance today and providing us at least some understanding of the products that are available that are being managed for economic development purposes in your division. We appreciate the information you provided. If you could give us a little bit of follow-up specifically on the CAKE project for me to understand just the timeline on the events, on poor runs, on what impacted that particular project from a loan product perspective, not from a community perspective of someone trying to provide for their community. Also, the delinquency rate, we want to see the life of the loan if that's possible, the write-offs, and sort of the ins and outs of the total fund so that we can look at the years and reflect on good runs, bad runs, or other impacts that might be uncertain for all of us. If you know those, if you could highlight those for us. I think of the 2008 crash at Wall Street, which in the lower 48 and on the markets, that would have pinched any community. With that, thank you. I'd like to invite and allow at least a moment for Commissioner Mike Navarre to come to the table and provide us any comments. Commissioner, we are, as you have heard before, bells ringing, so we're being called to the floor, but I saw you wincing and smiling and other facial recognition that communicated to me a desire to at least have an opportunity to address us.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Mike Navarre, Commissioner of the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. I have spoken to a couple of the senators on the Finance Committee and understand the concern. I've had some of the same questions for the division in order to try to understand better where the loan, what the genesis of these loan programs were, whether they're still valid under today's economic times with how things have changed since some of the loan funds have been put in place, and initial capitalization, total capitalization, whether or not funds have been reappropriated from the funds to other uses over time, because some of these loans have been in place for a long time, and that's just as likely as an additional capitalization. But I don't know that. It's a long period of time. With respect to the loan that was asked about, was specific to the hatchery and CAKE. That was over a 30 or 40 year time frame with a number of different loans, a number of different administrations, attempts to work out different types of fishery situations, et cetera, and we can get you all of the details on that particular loan and what's happened, what has completely happened, to give you an entire picture of that. And so with respect to the bills that you have before you, what the effort of those bills were to look at the specific loan programs, and then we have identified areas that could make them better. For example, for the Commercial Fisheries Revolving Loan Fund, boat values have gone up significantly. And so a $100,000 loan going to a $200,000 loan just reflects the value of the assets now, the fishing boats that are trying to be purchased under that program. With respect to the Microloan Revolving Loan Fund, it's a fairly new program, I think since 2012 maybe. Anyway, it's fairly new, and what we identified is the amortization term. They're very small loans, mostly in rural Alaska, that could be enhanced and better utilized if we had some additional terms. It's not to get into whether or not the loan should be there at all. All of these loan programs the genesis of all of them were someone in the legislature or some administration that brought them before the legislature and got them approved and capitalized. I haven't looked into all of the background detail on why the capitalizations were for the amounts that they are. I'm fairly new to this job, but it's something that I'm interested in, and I recognize the concerns of the committee and the committee members, and will intend to do a thorough review of all of that history, rationale, and justification to determine and make recommendations to the legislature on whether or not changes should be made, and if so, what they should be. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Are there questions for the commissioner? Commissioner Navarre, thank you for those comments, and we do have three bills in our body that are under consideration for this year. And with that, I've just received notice that we do have a CS back on the Title IV rewrite, and so I did not have anything yet. We were waiting. We're in the process of waiting for CSs on multiple bills. We have the CS for SB 76 available to us. That is the Title IV rewrite. I will bring that forward for you at 1:30, and we'll dedicate our time to looking at that to see if we're prepared to process that and move it out of committee, depending on your understanding of the CS and whether you're ready to move it. With that, 1:30, the bells are ringing. Please, if we could head straight to the floor. We're adjourned.